Hello, everybody. Welcome back to 97.1 The Fan. I am Jeremy Birmingham. This is the Austin and Berm Show, and this is Talking Stuff. This is where we talk stuff about Ohio State football recruiting. Today, I'll be joined by LettermanRow.com's Mick Walker. We're going to talk about Ohio State's efforts to take advantage of the turmoil in Happy Valley. We're going to talk about Ohio State's recent commitments in the class of 2026. We're going to dive into the discussion around 2027 five-star Jameer Brown and the decision that he made to sue the state of Ohio in an attempt to change the way things are done in the state for future high school football players. We're going to talk about all that and more on the latest episode of Talking Stuff right now. Joined now by LettermanRow.com's Mick Walker. As stated, Mick, it is picking up on the recruiting trail for Ohio State. Before we even dive into some of the guys that have committed earlier this week, we are recording this on Thursday afternoon. As we were sitting down to record it, Ohio State picked up a commitment in the class of 2028 from defensive lineman Jameer Weish, a big-time player, top 10 prospect early in the class of 2028 from Ohio. Buckeyes offered after seeing him this summer. And when you get a chance to look at him, we saw him, both you and I saw him back in the Under Armour camp series in April. Big kid, moves really well. Trotwood Madison, good program down there in Southwest Ohio. I'm not really good with geography. I know you've seen Jameer more recently. What do you make of his game? And what do you make of this decision for Ohio State now that the Buckeyes have their second 2028 commitment?
Yeah, I mean, this is a body that you don't really actually get that often in Ohio. Like, he's 6'5", like nearing 300 pounds. Like, this is an SEC body type that Ohio State found 45 minutes to an hour away from campus. And I remember, I'm trying to think of his exact name now, but I've stopped out of Trotwood a couple times to see his brother, Jamarcus, who's committed to Purdue in the 2026 class. And about 2 years ago, I stopped out to check on him. That's when I was covering Purdue. I wanted to see how Purdue was standing with Jamarcus. And the defensive coordinator pulls me over and points at Jameer and said, that's his younger brother, if you can believe it. He's going to be better than Jamarcus. And clearly, that's kind of started to take place already. Rivals has him as the number 63 overall prospect in the 2028 class. The Rivals industry ranking has the number 9 overall prospect, and I believe the number 1 defensive lineman, or number 2 maybe. He's up there in all those rankings, and it's for good reason. Like, he played well as a freshman. He's continued to play well as a sophomore. He looks, like you said, he looked good in camp. And Ohio State, like, saw him be devoted to trying to earn this offer. He came June 5th, worked out, didn't earn the offer, came back with his 7-on-7 teammates and his high school teammates for a camp a couple weeks later. Got to go through the paces again with Larry Johnson, with Tony Washington, Miguel Patrick. He earns the offer then. Like, Ohio State, knowing that he's willing to work, that he wants to be at Ohio State, that he wanted that offer, that's probably what kind of gives them even more confidence to take this and say, we'll take your commitment now.
Yeah, and the funny thing is, I mean, Ohio State is not a program that's out there pushing for commitments from 2028 prospects, even the ones in state. But because Jameer Weish is in Ohio, because of the upside, because of the lofty national ranking, because when a player like this, a top 10 prospect in the country, says, I want to commit, you don't say no. It is something that we look at, and you can look at it from both perspectives and say, well, there's 3 years until he can sign anywhere, so it's probably a lot of changes between now and then. But it's better to be out in front for if you're Ohio State, especially for an in-state kid, because that relationship now can build and grow, whether it's with Matt Patricia, whether it's with Larry Johnson, whether it's with James Laurinaitis, whether it's with whatever coaches are still on this staff 3 years from now. The relationship is going to be with the program itself. The relationship is based on the fact that this kid grew up loving Ohio State. And if we go back to that April Under Armour camp, you and I watching the defensive linemen, you know, when Jameer was taking his turns, like, you looked at him, you're like, wow, when he was standing side by side by Jamarcus, I think a lot of people, myself included, flip-flopped him and thought that Jamarcus was the bigger one. And he's not. Jamarcus is only listed at about 6'1", 300 pounds, and Jameer at 6'4", 275. So it's a really good early pickup. Him and Elijah Newman Hall, the running back from Tampa, it's a pretty dynamic starting point to the class of 2028 for the Buckeyes. But again, you certainly don't want to spend too much time worrying about that, because there's a lot of stuff happening in the class of 2026. And that is where we're going to really dive into this episode of Talking Stuff on 97.1 The Fan. Mick, this started this week for Ohio State. They've added two commitments to the class of 2026, back to 22 on the cycle. But both of these new commitments, and we'll start with Landry Breed, the three-star offensive lineman from Mentor, Ohio. He was offered by the Buckeyes, I think, September the 6th. committed on Monday night after a pair of visits in the last month and a visit back to North Carolina State where he was committed. And then the next day, the Buckeyes got back on the board with Kamari Bing, the former Maryland safety. When you look at these two players, it's not something that's going to excite a lot of people from a ranking standpoint, but it is a reminder that we're in a new era. Not every player is going to be a five-star when you recruit them, and it's up to Ohio State to mine for talent and develop that talent. But when you see guys like Landry Breed, which is where we'll start, 6'5", about 290 pounds, he plays tackle for Menor. He is body size-wise, a potential swing player for Ohio State, a guy that can play inside or outside, probably starts getting his early reps at Ohio State at tackle, but we'll see if that goes a different way. Menor's a really good program. They know how to put together football players up there. The Cardinals are among the best in the state. And if you watch Landry Breed's film, and I apologize, I probably should have just linked it on this episode of Talking Stuff, but like what you see is like a nasty disposition, a guy that plays with aggression, a guy that plays with some violence. And that's the type of thing that when you're recruiting developmental prospects, you have to find traits that you love. And Landry Breed has a lot of them.
And he's played a lot of football. Like we've told this story on here before. Like I saw him a couple years ago, I believe 2 years ago, when he was a sophomore. He was starting at left tackle for Menor. Like you said, he was a really good program, sophomore starting left tackle, going against Don Kirks, who has since signed with Ohio State and has stayed on the roster there. We've chronicled a lot of Cleveland Heights football the past couple years because of Marquise Davis and Brandon Caesar. Like he's those two teams play every single year. So he's played against multiple Division I prospects. Every single year, he's played hundreds of snaps, probably even thousands of snaps. Like there was a case last year where you take a guy like Bogdan Miller in your wide receiver room who needs a lot of time to learn the position to develop. And there's also a case now where you get to the later part of the cycle and you want to go get an in-state guy. Go get a guy that's played a lot of football, that knows what it's going to take. And, again, probably a swing guy, but we're in an era right now where Austin Saraville's starting at left tackle for Ohio State. Josh Fryer started multiple years at right tackle for Ohio State. Again, I don't think those are guys that are NFL tackles, but if they can play tackle at Ohio State, if they can stay on the edge, and you're pairing them with Sam Greer as well, who you probably think is your left tackle of the future, especially after you signed Carter Lowe the previous cycle. Like he doesn't need to play left tackle, but really any of those other four spots, because I think he's even kind of got the mentality that if you wanted to play center, he probably could. Like he's played a lot of football. He's going to continue to probably play a lot of football. And he just knows how to win and work hard, which I imagine Ohio State, Tyler Bowen really appreciate as you get to know Landry more.
Yeah, I think that point is really well made. If you're taking developmental prospects, it's better to have guys that need to be developed in a sense of like your body needs to be developed. You need to learn a little bit more about how to take care of your body. He's not an out of shape kid or anything like that, but he's a high school senior. So he's not like a guy that spent hours after hour after hour in the weight room. And once you look at what he does naturally and then you combine that with Ohio State's development, and what Mickey Marotti is able to get out of guys. Like, I think there's a major, major upside for Landry Breed. I saw him against Brandon Caesar and Cleveland Heights 2 years ago, the same year you saw him, I think. And he was, I thought, the best player on the field other than Marquise Davis for Cleveland Heights. So, and that was a day that, you know, the starting quarterback for Menor, Scotty Fox, is at West Virginia. Like, there's good players all over the field on that day. And I thought Landry Breed was excellent. Number 44 ranked prospect in Ohio. I don't know how these things get decided. I mean, there's not 43 better high school football prospects in Ohio than Landry Breed. That's just not.
At least players. Maybe prospects, if you really want to dive into it, there might be 20, 30 of those. But high school football players, like we said, Landry's played a lot of football again. And if we could give a hat tip to a guy who I think we both like, Dale Roddick up at T3. This is another guy that Dale's worked with. Landry's one. Carter Lowe, Luke Montgomery, the list goes on and on.
Max Riley, Sam Greer, yeah. All those guys, yeah.
And then even in the 27 class, you fast forward, Mason Wilt, Kellen Weimer, like, this is a pro, like, it was not just a Justin Fry thing. Ohio State likes what Dale Roddick does, and clearly they trust him a little bit. I imagine he was in the conversations about Landry as well. He's been really well coached because, like, there's what Ryan Jacoby, who signed with Ohio State years ago, that played at Menor. A lot of that same coaching staff, even though the head coach has changed over, is still there, that offensive coaching staff. Like, he's getting good coaching on the side, whether it's with his high school team or training. He's played a lot of football. He's really well coached. So if you're going to take another guy to be your fourth or fifth offensive lineman, there's probably not a better guy that you could find.
Yeah, and there is other discussions going on with the offensive line. We talked about it a little bit the last time we did Talking Stuff. Obviously, Ohio State hosted Micah Smith, the UCLA commitment, for an official visit for the Minnesota game. That's still an ongoing process. There are some discussions with other offensive linemen, which we'll talk about a little bit further on in this show. But, you know, we both, I don't mean to speak for you, but I think I can in this case, we both believe that Aaron Thomas will not end up in the Ohio State signing class. So now you have five commitments on the offensive line, but the odds of that five staying put is probably pretty low. So we'll see where things go with the other guys. But again, Landry Breed is much better than his ranking, and the priority that he was for North Carolina State, the push from Ohio State again, Tyler Bowen really liked him months ago. This is an offer that probably would have went out in the summer had Landry camped at Ohio State. It's probably an offer that could have come out earlier than that if he wasn't dealing with a shoulder injury at the end of last season and into the early part of the winter. So what you get here is a guy that can do a lot of things. Ryan Day harps nonstop these days about versatility and players who can play multiple positions, and guys that are able to be flexible, and Landry Breed is certainly that. The next commitment this week, the Tuesday commitment from Kamari Bing, maybe not quite as versatile, because he's a secondary guy. He can play corner. I know some schools have recruited him as a corner. Ohio State is recruiting the 6-foot-tall, 190-pound Baltimore, Maryland product as a free safety. Matt Guerrieri apparently told Kamari Bing, the former Maryland Terrapin commit, that he believed that Kamari Bing was the best free safety prospect in the country in the class of 2026. He is the number 10 ranked prospect in Maryland. I think he's listed as like the number 90 overall safety in the nation. Again, put on the tape. I don't know, man. He's at St. Francis in Baltimore. It's one of the best programs in the entire country. They play a national schedule. He finds a way to shine every time I see him play. Alabama going after him very hard. Indiana going after him very hard. Ohio State going after him hard. To me, that is much more important than a subjective ranking on a website, even one that I work for. This is a big win for Ohio State because he's kind of the perfect fit and the perfect complement to Blaine Bradford and Simeon Caldwell.
Yeah, the first play on his senior highlights, I believe, is a pick six against Chaminade Madonna Prep, who obviously produced Jeremiah Smith. Like you said, they play top competition. He's an ideal free safety. That's the thing that I think you come back to, and I think you wrote it. I wrote it as well. When you say you're bringing in Blaine Bradford, who could probably play free safety, strong safety, play in the nickel, whatever you want him to do, he's going to probably be closer to the ball, or like more around that, kind of what Caleb Downs does. So yeah. Then you need it. Jalen McLean and Jordan Fuller. They didn't go to New Jersey to get this one. They went to Maryland to get him, and he's a darn good one, Kamari Bing. But he fits perfectly with Simeon Caldwell and Blaine Bradford because he's going to be able to line up in the middle of the field, read the quarterback's eyes. And I think we saw it there in 2021. Like, if people don't always appreciate Jalen McLean or Jordan Fuller when they're here because they don't really make a lot of splash plays, they're not having a lot of interceptions. But when you always know that you got a guy that's going to be able to stop an explosive play from being to like a 15-yard gain instead of being like a 45-yard gain or a touchdown, like, that's all you really need, and Kamari Bing can do that at a high level. He's done that already.
Yeah, I asked some people inside the Ohio State program who the comparison was, and Jalen McLean's the name they brought up, a guy that is just a solid football player, high football IQ, and a guy that's going to be in the right spots making plays. And so, again, when the final three schools that he's considering are involve Alabama and Ohio State, like, that's when you know that you're in it for the right types of guys. And I think more and more, Mick, and maybe I'd like your opinion on this. Maybe you can tell me if you think I'm wrong, but as you mentioned, finding guys that have played a lot of football now is super important, but I think it's also important, more so maybe than ever, to find guys who come from high schools that have exceptionally high standards, and high schools that if you're not doing all the right things on and off the field at St. Francis, you're not playing. And you're getting to play the best competition in the country. You're getting tested. You're getting pushed to your limit every day in a place that has a ton of talent around you. And there's residual impact here for Ohio State. The Buckeyes are big fans of Raylon Henry, the 2027 corner and teammate of Kamari Bing. It's a nice recovery at St. Francis because there was some consternation there a year ago when the Buckeyes had Blake Woodbey committed and decided that they were not going to continue to pursue him. That was a potentially relationship-defining decision, but Matt Guerrieri's done a great job fixing it, and now the Buckeyes are back up and running in one of the countries and one of the East Coast's best programs. And with the changes that are happening around the East Coast on football fronts, if you can find a way to get into the St. Francis program now, which has been very kind to Michigan over the years, obviously very kind to Maryland, but also Penn State, like, now you've got a guy in Kamari Bing to help lead the way. And he's the right fit for Ohio State. He's a really talented player. There were a lot of people who, you know, were questioning Ohio State's decision to move on from some other safeties in the summertime, guys that they had initially penciled in for official visits that didn't make them. Patience is key in recruiting, man. Like the cycle is almost over, but almost doesn't matter. And that still gives you plenty of time to make moves. And Ohio State made this one quickly. Again, early September offer, visited 3 weeks later, committed 5 weeks later. The end of story, the power of Ohio State football.
I wrote about it, and I spoke with Kamari right after his official visit. And as a part of the official visits, you get to sit down with Ryan Day at the end of them. And sometimes those conversations are, hey, well, this is why we want you here. This is the NIL thing. Like, this is all that type of stuff. He said that Ryan just sat him down and said, hey, if you want to come to Ohio State, this is what you're going to have to do. Like, you're going to have to work hard. You're going to have to do really good things in the weight room, on the practice field, and all that to get on the field here. And like you said, that probably comes from having to deal with 3 or 4 years at St. Francis Academy, where if you aren't playing, there's going to be another Division I prospect that they can start over you if you're not on your P's and Q's, and clearly he has been.
Yeah. The quote was, I want to come here to Ohio State, or if I want to come here to Ohio State, I've got to know what I'm getting myself into, knowing how hard it's going to be, how much work I'm going to have to do, and how many sacrifices I'm going to have to be willing to make. And there are a number of times when I say things like, this player is an Ohio State kid, or an Ohio State, like, that's an Ohio State kid. That's it. There was no back and forth, haggling, crazy negotiation on the NIL front. I asked people about that after his visit, and they said, we told him the number we had in mind. They said, that sounds great. And that's it. Like, in an environment now where recruiting has become so transactional and based on everything monetary, it's nice when you see a kid who sees the big picture and decides that he wants to be a part of the things that Ohio State is putting together. Big win for Ohio State. Again, I know people are going to look at the rankings and call it three-star heaven or whatever. These are players Ohio State wanted in their class, and now back up to 22 commits in the class of 2026. With some other things potentially on deck. And then before we move on to the Penn State discussion and everything that's going on there and how the Buckeyes hope to capitalize, I do think it's worth diving into what else is still out there for Ohio State in the class of 2026 that's not Penn State related. So on Wednesday, Alex Gleitman of LettermanRow.com put in a recruiting prediction machine choice for Ohio State to flip Amari Latimer, the running back from Sandy Creek High School in Tyrone, Georgia, to commit to Ohio State over Wisconsin. We've continued to hear that's moving the right direction, but there hasn't been any sort of outward expression or a plan in place for Amari. And we're sort of, I think, all in wait and see mode for that. Beyond that, the conversations are ongoing with tight ends. I think next week might be a big week for that. We'll probably talk more about it next week on Talking Stuff when the Buckeyes have an off week, but I've heard some fairly concise discussions that there might be some movement inside of the state next week when Keenan Bailey has a chance to get around and see a few people. That might be a discussion about Nick Lauder down at in Cincinnati. That might be a discussion about PJ McFarland down in Cincinnati. That might be a discussion about Notre Dame commit Preston Frizell. It can go any number of ways. There's a lot of discussion still going on there. Buckeyes still looking for another offensive lineman or so. Defensive line, we are both still optimistic on Trey Quinn, the former Clemson commit. Would you say you're optimistic? Because I feel optimistic with a planned official visit for November 15th. Like, are you still in the optimistic category?
Yeah. Everybody that we've talked to recently the past couple of weeks has a certain level of optimism. You know that Texas has already kind of burned their official visit, so now you get on campus for your own official visit here in a couple weeks. I think the family, everybody hit it off. Hopefully you bring mom back up and you can kind of seal the deal with Larry Johnson, Ryan Day and all that when the official visit comes.
How much do you think that the Tennessee talk there needs to be paid more attention to? Because there's been so much discussion about Ohio State and Texas, and Tennessee and Miami are both kind of bubbling under the surface a little bit. The Tennessee visit, I don't know. It's close to home. We know Tennessee spends a lot of money. I'm interested. That's one that I kind of have my eyes on. Like I'm not saying that I think he'll surprise people and switch things up, but like it wouldn't shock me.
I do think any recruitment now, especially with the Adidas change and all them, like what Tennessee's going through, that you have to play in pay them some level of like credence and respect just because of who they are on the recruiting trail. The thing is, like, when they brought Drake Quinn on, they got him on campus earlier. I believe it was for the Georgia game when they lost. They had another commit on another like Virginia Tech edge commit on there. Like, they clearly have that need at the position, but I don't think it's kind of down to just Dre as their only option. Or as opposed to Ohio State, it's kind of, can we get Dre Quinn and we're going to keep chipping away at Luke Waifel. Like, that seems to be kind of the plan of defensive end as we, you and I talked today.
Yeah. Which is sort of scary when you think about it, but you know, you got to do what you got to do. Ohio State's in a position, unlike a lot of other schools, where you can tell a kid, hey, you're our guy. If we don't get you, we're not taking anyone else. And so I think that that might be a part of the discussion, and it seems to be having some impact. At linebacker, Ohio State missed out on Jacob Curry, who took his official visit for the Minnesota game. He committed to Oklahoma last week. The Sooners were always considered the favorite after he reopened his recruitment and after his first official visit this fall to Norman. People I talked to at Ohio State are not exactly bummed about that one. They like him as a kid. They just weren't sure that the fit in Columbus was correct for him because it might be just a little too big for what he was looking for. Jaden Williams, the linebacker at Massillon Washington High School in Ohio, the Indiana commitment, still has not set up an official visit. Still has, he visited for the Ohio game, but has not been back. Of course, Ohio State's only been back on campus one time since that point. So we don't know exactly if that one's moving in a positive direction or not. The buzz, the vibe I get is that there's a pretty good chance he sticks with Indiana regardless, because from what I've heard, the Hoosiers have made a very substantial NIL investment in him. Big-time athlete, not maybe the most complete football player right now, but a raw athlete that has a lot of upside, which is the type of guy you can do a lot of things with. So, and then at cornerback, and which now seems to be the last remaining spot in the secondary, Mick, because of Kamari Bing's commitment. You've got the plans for Jay Timmons, the Florida State commitment, to take an official visit to Ohio State for the Penn State game on November 1st. We both have heard that Danny Odom, the Nebraska commit who visited Ohio State officially in June, is expected to be back in Columbus that weekend as well. There's still discussion about Rajon Duncan, the Washington commit, about maybe getting him on campus in mid-November. Things are happening. After a couple months of relative chill on the recruiting front for Ohio State, stuff is certainly heating up.
Yeah, Jay Timmons, who I think you and I both believe is one of the better cornerbacks in the country, regardless of class, and especially in the 2026 class. He did an interview with our War Chant, our Florida State site over at Rivals, just kind of previewing the trip and talking about why he's taking it. He kind of played it off as just, you know, enjoying it being 17, which I imagine probably is part of that. But then you also have to realize, hey, this official visit we can fly to, if we can drive to if we want, because it's only going to be about 3 hours. Like, you're playing for one of the top teams in the country, not a program where they're discussing the buyout of the head coach that you're about to sign with. Like, you have Tim Walton, who's done really well on the recruiting trail and at developing. There's a lot of things Ohio State can pitch. And I'll be interested to see once they get on my campus, like, how far they turn that dial to being like pitch. Because I don't think Ohio State really is ever in the business of negative recruiting. But they, if you start really comparing things and like pitching a guy on Ohio State, it kind of becomes a quick case when you're talking about Florida State.
Yeah, I mean, you don't have to directly and implicitly negatively recruit against other schools. You can let stuff be inferred. And I think Ohio State can just point to its program stability over the last 100 years and say, well, look, we're good. Like, there's none of that stuff here. You can come here. And obviously, Timmons, a 4-star prospect, Rivals.com has him as the number 2 ranked cornerback in the country. He's number 18 in the industry ranking. He's a Florida State legacy. His father played there, but he lives in Pittsburgh. It's not, from what I understand, I've heard from a few different places that maybe his relationship with his father, obviously important. It's your father, but he doesn't live with him. It's not like a guy that's in his ear all the time. And I don't think, as we've seen throughout this process in this cycle, both with Corbin Fordham's parents, both and then Aaron Thomas's parents, if your son has a chance to play at Ohio State, you don't feel bad about them saying yes. And Jay Timmons is certainly worth now paying attention to as that official visit gets scheduled for the weekend of November 1st. Penn State is one of the teams that had been trying to flip Jay Timmons over the last couple of months. Michigan, another one. But everything's changed at Penn State now because James Franklin got axed. The Nittany Lions 2027 recruiting class fell almost entirely apart.
And there is no commitments left in that class,
which is perfect. It perfectly makes sense. Nobody should be committed that far ahead of time without a coach in place. So that makes sense. And now we're starting to see the crumbling of the 2026 class from Penn State as well. But there are a handful of holdouts and guys on that roster, or on the future guys on that roster, who are trying to be patient. They're in wait and see mode. They want to see who the hire is. I think that there's a discussion that, hey, if Matt Rule's the guy, you're going to feel pretty good about it. You know, maybe you don't have to make a move. If Penn State can't hire Matt Rule or something goes wrong there, and then they can't hire Kurt Cignetti and they can't hire Marcus Freeman, and you can't, like, all of a sudden you start to move down that list and you have to think about or consider taking a flyer on a potential coach at Penn State, I think things get a little bit different. So Ohio State, with 22 commitments, is certainly not in the market for a large number of add-ons in the class of 2026. As we just ran down the list, there's, what, four positions and maybe another running back in there that we'll talk about next week as well. But, you know, this is a conversation now with Penn State where it really centers on just a couple of guys. One of them on Thursday morning is a four-star offensive lineman, Kevin Brown. He is the highest-ranked Penn State commitment. He's from Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, been committed to Penn State for 16 months, never a kid that wanted to look elsewhere, and was told basically you should. And he, kudos to Phil Troutwine, the offensive line coach at Penn State, for being willing to tell him, hey, you should explore your options, because who knows what's going to happen. That's a big thing for a coach to say and do. I think Kevin Brown and his family should appreciate that. It's not a surprise that the first team that popped up on his list of spots he wanted to see was Ohio State. And it looks like there's a potential for his first visit at Ohio State to be an official visit when they're playing Penn State.
Full credit to Ryan Snyder over at our Blue White Illustrated, the Penn State site over at Rivals, because he kind of broke this down on their podcast, and he's done a good job writing about it. Like, he's the one that Kevin initially talked to about Ohio State. But Harrisburg, where Kevin Brown plays a lot of Saturday football games, just because that's what their schedule lines up to be. They have two more games that are on Saturdays, this coming Saturday, the Saturday following that. Then they have an off week before they get into the playoff. Like you said, that off week aligns perfectly with when Ohio State is at, or when Ohio State hosts Penn State. The other school that was mentioned in there was West Virginia. They are at Houston that week, I believe. So even if you wanted to take an official visit that weekend, I don't know if it would really work.
Did his father play at West Virginia? Is that right?
I believe that is the case. So, like, when you look at it, and again, I don't know how quickly these things could speed up, but Ohio State clearly has another need for an offensive lineman, or wants to get another offensive lineman. I said it on the Letterman Lounge message board. I think Kevin reminds me a lot of, like, Luke Montgomery. I don't think he's the longest offensive lineman, but if you told me he could play tackle or play guard, or he's just a big moving guard, like, where you can kind of pull him and use counter runs with him, I think he would do really well at that. And again, Tyler Bowen knows this area well from having been at Penn State, even as the tight ends coach. Like, he knows that PA area well. So I imagine there's those kind of relationships, the need, the curiosity of just looking around. And even if Penn State does hire Matt Rule, like, that could happen in a situation where they don't even really get to do an in-home visit, and it's just really phone calls. And if that's the case, do you feel comfortable just saying, I'm committed to Penn State? Which, if you do, credit to Kevin Brown and his family. But at least they're giving it a look, like you said, to kind of see if Ohio State's a spot where they could fit in as well.
Yeah, I was told that there is a possibility, and this is all obviously still up in the air. All this discussion about Kevin Brown really came to a head on Thursday morning. I was told that there's a possibility he could be on campus for the Penn State game in an unofficial capacity, and then come back for an official a few weeks later, maybe for the Rutgers game or the Penn State game. So obviously, this is a kid who had no desire to look elsewhere. He was not interested in flipping from Penn State. But now that it's there, Ohio State and West Virginia appear to be best positioned to capitalize on it. He is a top 75 overall prospect. He is a put you in the ground and enjoy it type of offensive lineman. He's kind of a slob. He's got the slob mentality, but he does not have the slob look. I don't know if you've seen the photos of him. He looks like, you know, that Giga Chad meme on the internet.
He's a handsome fellow.
Yeah, good looking kid, man. And a kid that clearly is in a tough position in not wanting to have to do this. But if it works out that way, great for Ohio State. I mean, it was 14 years ago when Urban Meyer walked into Ohio State and Joe Paterno was getting fired, and the Buckeyes were able to flip Noah Spence and get Joey O'Connor from Penn State's class, and made some moves there. So maybe they can capitalize again. Jackson Samuels Ford, four-star defensive end from Pennsylvania. He took an official visit with the Buckeyes in June. He told me that there has been conversation with Ohio State over the last couple of weeks. So that started, that predates the Franklin termination. I don't believe Ohio State's going to push real hard there until they get a sense about the Dre Quinn stuff. I think that they want to be careful as to not mess up what they're building there. But it is an existing relationship, and it is something that maybe is worth looking into. Another existing relationship is North Carolina linebacker Elijah Littlejohn. This is an interesting one because, again, this is not a kid who had any desire to look elsewhere. There was not like a part of him that was interested in talking to other schools. Ohio State actually tried really hard to get Elijah Littlejohn on campus in June for an official visit the weekend of June 20th. They really wanted to swap out when the Buckeyes canceled the official visit of Tyler Atkinson. The goal was to get Elijah Littlejohn to fill that spot at that moment. He ended up committing to Penn State that week and closed down his recruitment. So the discussion is there. I've heard it's Oregon and Georgia alongside Ohio State as teams that are really pushing for Littlejohn. Interestingly enough, though, like, he's not your traditional off-ball linebacker, which is what James Laurinaitis really wants. That's why Ohio State didn't make a serious push with someone like Storm Miller in the state of Ohio. So, like, there's moving parts here, but Littlejohn is a player I know Ohio State had interest in and has been interested in and has been in contact with since this firing happened in Happy Valley. Messiah Mickens, I have on this list, Mick, and I think both of us don't really see it happening, but I've included him on this list because when he reopened his recruitment on Tuesday or Wednesday this week, he mentioned that Ohio State was one of the teams that he's been hearing from. And that perked my ears up a little bit because I don't know exactly what the fit would be. And I haven't been able to get confirmation if he's hearing from the running backs or the linebackers, because I know there's some people in Columbus who think that he could be a potential linebacker.
Yeah, I don't think there's a lot of interest, or at least from what I've checked, the offensive, like, running back side of things. When I had mentioned Messiah Mickens' name in the spring, when he was kind of looking around at Notre Dame and some other schools, if he could visit, I don't think there was a lot of interest in having him as a running back. I think most of those people I talked to said he'd probably be better suited as a linebacker. And again, I don't know if that's what James Laurinaitis is looking for. I think Elijah Littlejohn makes a lot more sense, even though James Laurinaitis, like you said, wants more of a traditional linebacker. If Arvel Reese is going to walk out of that door and you can bring Elijah Littlejohn in the same door, like a month later or a couple weeks later, or maybe a month before, whatever that timeline works out, I think that'd be a great fit. The same kind of thing, like you mentioned with Jackson Ford and Dre Quinn. Like, I think Dre Quinn's essentially the same type of player, maybe a little bit more like flexible and like he's a better athlete.
Yeah.
But if you can kind of get a guy like him to come in and develop with Kari Wilder and bring him in, like, you are just not in a position where you can turn away any edge prospects or really any like defensive prospects, because you're going to lose a good bit of talent from that side of the ball after the season.
Yeah, and so we'll see what happens. I just thought the fact that he initially brought up Ohio State, and again, a lot of times when kids are asked questions like that, they're almost trying to manifest something to happen. It's interesting. Messiah Mickens has been committed. He had been committed to Penn State since August of 2023. So, like, again, he lost his running backs coach, and then all of a sudden now he's lost his head coach that he had been committed to. So it makes sense to reopen things and look around, but I imagine he'll be a priority for the new staff whenever that gets named there in Penn State. The other one that's on this list maybe is me doing a little manifesting or wishful thinking. I don't know. We'll find out. That is Pierce Petersohn. He is a four-star tight end quarterback defensive lineman from Minnesota. I don't know, dude. Sometimes I just get fixated on certain players, and I watch this kid's film and I see what he does. And I think about what Penn State did with Tyler Warren, and I'm like, man, you could take a kid like this and do some things. Big athlete, 6'5", 200 pounds, runs a 4.8 in the 400 and an 11 flat in the 100. Like, as I said, plays quarterback, does a lot of things. In a class where Ohio State now has a need at tight end because of Corbin Fordham decommitting and flipping to Florida State, is that not worth just a phone call? I don't know. It's probably worth a phone call.
I agree with you on that. It feels more likely that I think it's pronounced Peterson, even though it's
no, it's not. It's pronounced Petersohn. It says it right on his X profile. Pronounced Petersohn.
I thought I'd heard from some podcasts that it was Peterson. Regardless, I feel like that's more likely that Minnesota just tries to keep him home because I think that's what happened in the summer. Like, that's who he chose between. But like you said, if you need another...
Yeah, but Ohio State wasn't calling then.
If you need a tight end, you work the big board, you figure out whoever you like, and maybe Pierce finds his way on that board with some of those in-state guys.
I'm intrigued. That's all I'm saying. I think that... You know, at this point, if you're Keenan Bailey, the tight end that you're taking in the class of 2026 is a developmental prospect. It is not a guy who you're going to be counting on to come in and play right away. So I think that it really expands the conversation to a lot of guys. Preston Frizell is one, of course. PJ McFarland is another. I think PJ McFarland might be the best current player at tight end in Ohio.
McFarlane, by the way. I don't think there's a D at the end, as you like to.
I think you're right on this. Okay, this one you win. But... I think he might be the best current player, but I don't know that he's the best long-term prospect. So these are the discussions that Keenan Bailey and his staff have to have. But a guy like this, 6'5", 200 pounds, running an 11 flat and playing quarterback and playing tight end. And I don't know. It's fun. It's fun to imagine what you can do with a guy like that if you give yourself a chance. And so I was told, I reached out to Pierce earlier this week. Keenan Bailey began following him on Twitter earlier this week, but he has not reached out to him. There's not been any discussion yet. Ohio State with an off week next week. Who knows? You never know what happens, I guess. But he's on my list of guys to watch. But really, the opportunity for Ohio State to capitalize on what's going on in Penn State is with a very select group of people in the class of 2026, but mostly with Kimon Spell, the running back, the five-star from Pennsylvania in the class of 2027, who it seemed like Mick was on his way out of their recruiting class anyway over the last few weeks. Specifically because of growing interest in Notre Dame and Ohio State. And now it seems like all the discussion that we've had at running back in 2027 is about David Gabriel Georges. He's still clearly the top guy on the board, but now you have what I would consider like the best potential viable option as a second guy in case things fall through with David Gabriel Georges.
Yeah, I saw Kimon earlier this year when I went out to see Jimmy Kalis. He was still committed at the time, sat down and talked to him. And he talked about how big of a fan he was of Ezekiel Elliott. Like, for some reason, he's a Cowboys fan in Western Pennsylvania, but grew up watching the Cowboys, grew up watching Ezekiel Elliott. And obviously, when you're in Western Pennsylvania, it's easy to watch Ohio State as well. That's one, like you said, I think Ohio State has a high level interest in. He visited for the Texas game. And then if you look at the rest of their decommitments in 2027, there's been four of them. Like, that whole class, like you said, has fallen apart. Landon Von Brandt is an offensive lineman from Delaware. I think Ohio State has been Tyler Bone has been in communication with him, and there's a goal to get him on campus at some point here soon. Khalil Taylor is a top 50 wide receiver from the Pittsburgh area. He's going to be on campus for that Penn State game.
Imagine being a top 50 ranked overall player and wide receiver and choosing to go to Penn State. Like, what are you doing?
He's going to be on campus for the Penn State game. He's hoping to get an offer yet. Doesn't have an offer yet. And then the other one is Gabriel Jenkins. The third of the Penn State guys that are just from Pittsburgh. He's going to visit for the UCLA game later. He's looked good at camp whenever he's come up. He plays quarterback for his team. He plays safety for his team, but he's probably a linebacker at the next level and probably someone that I imagine James Laurinaitis kind of likes the cut of his jib when you watch the film.
If you're Pat Narduzzi, don't you just get pissed off that you're not in the Big Ten? Like, you've got all these talent in Pittsburgh and they're all going to play at Penn State just because the chance to play in the Big Ten is better than playing in whatever league Pitt is in now.
What if he was in the Big Ten here in a couple of weeks, say in East Lansing? You know, what if in like a month? What if that happened?
Maybe. Pat Narduzzi is so much better as a coach, and Pitt is a good program, all things considered. And now, obviously, they're not on the same level as Penn State, but boy, at some point, you got to keep these players home, don't you? If you're Pitt, my goodness, that's a digression.
Maybe you can come into East Lansing. Maybe you have a quarterback that's from the 419 area they could bring up with you, East Lansing, that I know Jeremy Birmingham is a fan of as well.
I do like me some Mason Heinchel. But yeah, I mean, this is the business of the sport. Things are changing, constant evolution, hirings, firings, new rules, new portal rules, new transfer rules, new blah, blah, blah. It's time for new rules in Ohio, too, because Jameer Brown is suing the state of Ohio. Ohio State five-star wide receiver commit in the class of 2027, the number two ranked player, I think. Is he the number two ranked overall prospect in the country in the 27 class at this point, or is he just top five? I don't know.
I imagine he's probably top five.
It keeps moving. But Jameer Brown is suing the state of Ohio, and it's about NIL, Mick. He's going to win the lawsuit, because there's nothing that the OHSSA can do to stop it. It is a reminder again of how Ohio just as a state, is pretty conservative when it comes to making changes. The state was exceptionally slow to adapt to the 7-on-7 era, which forced Trey McNutt, now at Oregon, to start a lawsuit against the state 2 years ago, or last year. I don't know. It's all blurring together. But now Jameer Brown doing the same thing in an attempt to make sure that Ohio high school football players can get paid and make money off of their name, image, and likeness. I don't know that this really has a widespread effect on Ohio State, but it is obviously important for players in the state of Ohio, like Jameer Brown, who have an opportunity for them, like Panini or Leaf trading cards, to make money by selling autographs and that kind of stuff and not being ruled ineligible if he does. So I think the most impact this has is for schools around the state that have really good players that have lost them to like IMG and other schools in the last few years, because now those players don't have to leave the state of Ohio to start taking advantage of the market. And for Jameer Brown, like, not a lot of players are going to be impacted by it as much as Jameer Brown, because he is a top 10 player and a five-star and a future, you know, Biletnikoff finalist at Ohio State. But this is it's overdue, but I understand why people are slow to adapt to stuff like this.
It was going to happen at some point. Jameer, and you and I both know Jameer and his mother, who's a part of this lawsuit as well, like, enough at this point that I don't think this is a thing where like they're looking to go get like millions, or like search for Miami to offer him a $2 million contract per year. And like, they just want to be able to, like you said, if Leaf or Panini comes calling, let's make some money off of it. I think one of the pictures I have behind me here is Luke Montgomery with a local restaurant in Findlay, Ohio. Like, he waited till he got to Ohio State to do an NIL deal with. Why can't guys do that in like high school right now? So some of that stuff will be worked out, whether it's millions or local or just being able to get a free meal whenever you like go to this restaurant. Some of that stuff will be worked out. And I, like you said, I think this is all going to happen here soon, just because the OHSA, as much as I respect them for letting us cover their events, does not have a great grips or control over any of this stuff when they get challenged.
You know, they did take a vote on this 3 years ago and turned it down at the time, but did so knowing full well it was probably going to come back around. After the Trey McNutt lawsuit a year ago, this seemed inevitable. So kudos to Jameer Brown and his family for being the ones to undertake it. It is not going to impact anything about his commitment at Ohio State or anything else. Apropos of nothing, he is visiting Notre Dame this weekend. The Notre Dame website's on the internet making a big deal of that. What do you make of that, Mick, knowing that Jameer? So to be fair, he is going to Notre Dame solo. He's not going there with a team full of players that he's made other visits with. And he obviously has a good relationship with Marcus Freeman, who is a Wayne alum. I personally, in like my concern level, would be like zero. Do you think I'm being, what's the word I'm looking for, naive?
I think 0-1's probably inaccurate. Like you said, Marcus Freeman's a Wayne guy. Like, they're from Dayton. They have a good relationship. Mike Mickens, the cornerback's coach, is another Wayne guy. Like, all those relationships are kind of working in their favor here. I don't think that really changes where, like, Ohio State and Jameer Brown fit into this. Like, he still loves Brian Hartline. He's been at, almost every home game if he hasn't been playing a game himself. He's been very present at Ohio State every chance he can get. He's recruiting for other people. We even saw it. I believe Brock Williams announced a top three or top two or something with Ohio State. It was included a couple weeks ago. Jameer quote tweeted that. Jameer Weiss announced his commitment. Jameer Brown quote tweeted that as well. Like, he's very front facing with Ohio State, with Brady Edmonds in that 2027 class. I don't really think you have a lot to worry about. He's visited Miami. Like, he's visited other places. He's going to cool games. Like, What can we say? Like, if you and I had the choice to go to USC and Notre Dame or Wisconsin, Ohio State this week, and just going to see USC, Notre Dame would be cooler, but we're going to go see Ohio State, Wisconsin, because that's our job. Yeah. Jameer Brown gets a little bit more choice and he gets to go to the cool game.
Yeah. And similar to the way this conversation on Talking Stuff started today with Jameer Weiss, there's still over a year until Jameer Brown can sign a letter of intent or whatever that's called now. The letter of intent doesn't actually exist.
It's a Big Ten financial agreement. It's
He's still got a year plus until he can do that. It would be foolish of us to ignore the fact that a lot of schools around the country, or their fan bases at least, are clamoring to hire Brian Hartline. I think it makes perfect sense for a guy like Jameer Brown to just have a backup plan. And Notre Dame may very well be his backup plan, which is pretty great. If you're a high school athlete and Notre Dame is your safety school, like that's pretty good for you. So it doesn't mean anything now, but it's smart for Jameer and his family to make sure that if in the event something happens and Brian Hartline isn't at Ohio State, for what either after this year or after next, that he's got a plan if he doesn't feel comfortable with whoever Ohio State uses to replace the hypothetical departure of Brian Hartline, which again,
and I think that's football. I think we can both confidently say here in 2 weeks when Ohio State returns to the Shoe for the Penn State game, Jameer Brown and his mother and his teammates and all these people will be with him at that game as well. Like,
it seems pretty likely. Seems pretty likely. There is a lot of stuff happening on the Ohio State recruiting trail. This has been Talking Stuff where we're trying to break it down. Apologize for a slightly shorter show. Just trying to condense things. Don't want to do so much rambling as I have a tendency to do, because once I start talking about other things,
Burns got to mow the lawn, folks. That's really what it is.
Well, I also need to mow the lawn because it's getting close to that like final cut of the season, and I'm really excited about it. But as always, I truly appreciate Mick Walker from Letterman Row joining me on 97.1 The Fan and anywhere you get your audio podcast stuff. This has been Talking Stuff. Thank you for watching. We'll be back next week. It's an off week for Ohio State. We're going to talk about where the Ohio State coaches are on the road. We're going to talk about some key visits of players elsewhere and see if any new names pop up in the class of 2026 as Ohio State looks to round out this class over the remaining 7 weeks of the 2026 recruiting cycle. Again, for Mick Walker, I'm Jeremy Birmingham. Thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. We will see you next time. Goodbye.